All right, the NCAA Women's Championship continues tonight. Two more Elite Eight matchups on ESPN and the ESPN app. You got number 2 Maryland squaring off against the top seed South Carolina. That's our first game, 7 Eastern. Then you got the 3 seed Ohio State and number 1 seed Virginia Tech. Last two spots in the Final Four are on the line. And with that, we are delighted to be back and better than ever. Another huge hour coming your way. We're live at the Seaport. We're brought to you by Chase. That's Canty. That's Field. I'm Greeny. We got a good crew put together for you today, coming off of an unbelievable weekend in sports. And it finished yesterday. Final Four on the men's side. Two spots being decided. Creighton, San Diego State. Oh, the controversial finish. 6 seed Creighton, 5 seed San Diego State. 34 seconds left of the second half. San Diego State inbounding, and not well. They had a 2-point lead, but not for long. So now we're tied, and here's how it comes down. This is Darian Trammell, clock winding down. You see it. You saw it. You know what happened. The left hand on the hip. The call is made in a tie game with 1 second left. In a game where basically nothing was called a foul all day long. San Diego State, the free throws. Trammell missed to the first shakily, but knocks down the second. And then a crazy little sequence here at the end. Creighton with a last chance. Ball is tipped. It lands out of bounds. They wind up not getting another opportunity. And with that, it's over. San Diego State on to the Final Four. Here's Coach Greg McDermott. Classy.
Two teams played their tails off. Officiating is part of the game, we're not going to go there. We lost the game because we didn't do enough, and San Diego State did.
I'm stunned at how classy a response that was. To be completely honest with you, I want to yell at him right now on behalf of everybody and say, Coach, yeah, come on. And look, I get it. He's a better man than I am, Seth, and I have a feeling he's a better man than you are, because I don't think there's any way in the world that the Seth Greenberg that I know, if your opportunity to go to the Final Four was lost on that call in a game where nothing was a foul all day long, how would you have handled that conversation?
Greeny, I might have had an out of body experience. I'm not sure. I mean, I might have been certifiably insane for a short period of time. Then I kind of would have collected myself and been very diplomatic. Because you know, when you think about me, you think about a guy that takes the high road all the time, Greeny. But look, this game came down to something very simple. There were only 22 fouls called in that game. That foul right there was the first time anyone would have been in the bonus. You cannot redefine a foul in the last play of the game. If that was a foul at the beginning of the game, I got no problem with making the call. But it wasn't, right? It was a physical game. Anyone who watched that game would say, you know, two teams really competing, physical game, make the call at the beginning of the game. If you don't make it the beginning of the game, you cannot redefine a foul the last play of the game.
And I want to give the context again for everybody just joining us here to what Seth just said. There were 4 games played on the men's side, you know, this weekend, the Elite Eight games. That one had 22 fouls called. The others had 30, 37, and 39. So that 22 is a very, very low number. And as a consequence, that's the problem I have. It's not about swallowing the whistle at the end of the game. It's about making calls that are consistent throughout the day. Now, Vince Carter, you're one of the greatest college players and NBA players that ever lived. To what degree are players playing based upon the way the game is being officiated? Which is to say, when you're playing defense in a situation like that, how aware of you are the fact that, you know what, they're not calling fouls all day. I can be a little more physical here.
Yeah, you learn that intel in the first 5 minutes of the first half when you're in college, and the first quarter of the NBA. You know, that's when you kind of see what the tone is set by the referees, because every official or officiating crew referees games a little differently than probably the night before or the game before. So you kind of put yourselves in those situations. You see what you can get away with. Yes, I'm looking at this as a player. Yes, you see the left hand right there clutched on the hip, but Trammell does a great job. He feels the contact, kind of blows up a little bit, sells the call, puts the pressure and the onus on the referee to make a call. I agree with what Coach Seth says as far as, like, if you don't make that call early and you set the tone, allowing these young men to play physical basketball, you can't change the tone of the game late in the game because of what's at stake. Let these men decipher the game on their own.
Yeah, and I thought that the crew at CBS did a really good job with this yesterday. They had Gene Steratore sitting out there, who does a really good job, who reffed on the college level forever. And he was explaining this, Seth. I mean, those are conversations that you're having, all kidding aside, with officials as the game is going on also, right? Hey, you're not giving us this, you're not giving us that. So my point is, we all didn't just figure out that they were calling the game a certain way at the very end. That's something that everyone is cognizant of as the game is going on, right, Coach?
Exactly, Greeny. I'll tell you, that's also what the officials are discussing. You think about it at halftime. Coaches make adjustments. Are you telling what? Officials go to the locker room and say, you know, we're letting them play. It's a physical game. That's just the way it is. That's the way these two teams play. Mm-hmm. So that's they set the rules for the game. And you know what? They went into the locker room, and I'm sure they had that conversation.
All right, frustrating. As a fan who just, I didn't want to see it end that way. I didn't have a rooting interest in it. Anyway, Seth, outstanding today. As always, we'll see you the rest of this week along the road to the Final Four. Meanwhile, let me show you the NBA highlight of the day yesterday. And it involves a fella by the name of LeBron James. Perhaps you're familiar with his work. He'd been out 4 weeks with that foot. Many people thought he wouldn't come back this year at all. Instead, he's back and better than ever might be a stretch, but he looked pretty good. And he had 19 points coming off the bench, only the second time in his career he came off the bench. But they're playing at home in a big game against Chicago, and they got worked. Troy Brown throws that down for two of his 18 points on the day. And here's LeBron. But the Lakers were down as many as 17 in the first half, and they were losing by 8 at the break. Third quarter, it's a 15-point deficit. And then watch what happens here. Austin Reeves, we got a turnover. We're going the other way. Zach LaVine is going to lay it in for Chicago. He had 32. But go back to Anthony Davis. Stop me if you've heard this before. Davis is hurt. He's got like a finger jam here. He would take just 8 shots on this day. He'd stay in the game with the fingers wrapped up. But in the end, it was too much Chicago. I mentioned 32 points for Zach LaVine. There he is. And then it's former Laker Patrick Beverley putting this thing away. He wanted to knock the Lakers out, and he certainly hands them a bad loss, 118-108. So, LeBron, when did you know you were making this comeback?
When the doctors told me I was healing faster than anybody I've seen before with the injury.
Did anyone ever suggest surgery?
Yeah, 2 doctors.
Why did you decide against it?
Because I went to LeBron James' feet. And he told me I should.
All right, that's hilarious. I mean, I don't even know exactly what the LeBron James of feet means. I can think of a million jokes, but one way or the other, nothing funny about the situation here. Lakers lose a game that they really needed. Look where they're sitting. I mean, a bad week, and they could be out of the play-in entirely. A good week, and they could be inside the top 6. So a lot left to be decided in the 7 games they have remaining. More NBA as we continue. In the meantime, back to the NFL, where we are still waiting on a deal between the Packers and the Jets involving a fellow by the name of Aaron Rodgers. The newest Jet and former Packer, Alan Lazard, told TMZ he's not worried about the lack of a deal yet.
There's no worry on my end, especially knowing that Aaron has his full-on commitment to be a New York Jet this year. You know, I think a lot of us are obviously eager just for it to kind of get through. The beauty is that, you know, we don't play a game until September.
Right.
And, you know, we haven't even started OTAs yet. So there's no rush in getting this process done and everything. And I know once it goes through and we're able to get in the classroom together, we're able to get on the field together, we're going to start cooking up something special.
All right, so Yates, Teddy Bruschi is here, Chris Canty, but Yates, I'll start with you. Like, where does this thing give? I think we all understand what they're fighting over. They're fighting over the Jets' first-round pick, which is 13 overall in this year's draft. And the Packers are saying, we're not doing this unless you put that in. And the Jets are saying, well, we're not putting it in, and they're counting on the fact that they will crumble. Where is the pressure point where one side or the other jumps out of the car in this game of chicken?
First of all, to the Jets organization. This man has dedicated his entire life, fandom to you.
Correct.
He was out last week. You couldn't have thrown him a bone and just gotten this deal done. That would have made last week so much more.
I agree.
The time would have flown by last week.
You know, you're not on this show all that often, but the fact that you've made this all about me, I think you will be back. Go ahead.
Okay, this is good to know here. I'm starting to figure out how to play my cards.
Yeah.
But you're right. Listen, we have 3 deadlines that I think are pertinent to this Aaron Rodgers and Jets situation. One is the draft, 31 days from today, exactly 1 month, and whether the Jets are willing to budge on their draft pick, their protections, and the Packers are willing to budge on their draft pick demands is obviously one. There's the June 1st cap situation scenario. scenario. And then, as Alan Lazar sort of alluded to, you know, the games begin in September, right? We still have another, what, 5 months until the actual games are begin. But both sides right now, Chris, believe that they are the ones that have the leverage. We can debate who has more leverage. The bottom line is both of them think that they are in the driver's seat in terms of making the other have to continue to sit there and stare at them and budge before a deal is done. This is going to get done, but until somebody concedes a little bit or blinks, it will not be constant.
Yeah, at the outset of this whole process a couple of weeks ago when Rodgers came out and said he wanted to play for the Jets, I was in the camp that Green Bay has all the leverage. But after peeling back several of the layers, the Packers need to get this done just as soon as the Jets need this gun. And here's the reason why. Because if you look at the situation now, the Packers can get draft capital to help Jordan Love this season.
Right now.
If you wait until after the draft, now you're talking about future draft picks that doesn't help him get off the best start in 2023. But the other thing, and even more importantly, is that if for some reason Aaron Rodgers is still on the roster when training camp starts, Aaron Rodgers can just show up to Jets training camp. If he passes a physical, then they have to let him practice. If he gets hurt, they're on the hook for that $60 million. So as much as the Jets want him there day one for training camp, the Packers have to want him off the roster day one of training camp. That's why I think it makes more sense for the Green Bay Packers to get a deal done before the draft as opposed to waiting to after the draft.
Here's the thing, though, Teddy. Like, we keep talking about all these things. Here's what I don't like. I don't like people saying, oh, it's going to get done. Oh, it's going to get done. You know what happens in my life? It doesn't get done. Like, when you're a fan of the Jets, I'm telling you right now, our entire lives, everything everyone told us, oh, don't worry, it'll work out, it doesn't. These things don't work out. That's why we're waiting 50-plus years for a moment like this. So until it's done, it's not done, Teddy, and it's not okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of Jets fans that feel the same way you do, Greeny. They just want it done. But I just say wait, because you got to fight for 13, to have 13. The Jets can just say, hey, man, we're going to be ready no matter when Aaron Rodgers comes. We got one of his receivers. We got one of his favorite offensive coaches in Nathaniel Hackett just waiting for him. And they're probably already talking back and forth and I don't know, just on a friend, letting them know what they're going to do. They're already on the same page. And by the way, Green Bay, all you're doing is motivating our guy Aaron Rodgers even more, because you're pissing him off, because you're treating him this way, and you're giving him validation like, see, fellas, this is what I said about those guys and how they treat these guys when they leave the building. They don't care at all what goes on. So he's getting more and more motivation, just getting ready to put on that green uniform for the New York Jets, and that's what it's going to be all about. The Packers aren't going to get 13, because if I'm the Jets, the more I see it, it's like the Jets have it. They got control. We'll just wait. We'll just wait. Aaron will get together in California with his receivers and get it done. I mean, it's going to happen, and he's going to be even more motivated. So thanks, Green Bay. And we'll also pick a nice offensive lineman at 13 to help our quarterback.
Can we meet in the middle?
This
Can we meet in the middle? Let's meet
no.
in the middle. Right?
What's
no, we'll
the middle?
Find a way. You ready for this one?
Go.
I'll throw this to you, GM of the Jets, right now. Aaron Rodgers and pick 15, which Green Bay currently owns, in exchange for 13, 42, and 43. So the Jets move back two slots in the first round, but still have a very valuable first-round pick. Green Bay moves up just a little bit in the first round. And as Chris alluded to earlier, 42 and 43 has, according to some charts, the equivalent value of the 17th overall pick in the draft. Let's meet in the middle. Let's get this done. We need Greeny to have something to smile about for the next 5 months before
Love
the
it.
Games begin.
Love it.
Going once, going twice, going three times, sold. The deal is done. Put it on the bottom line. We've made it happen. Just call Joe Douglas and Brian Gutekunst. Tell them we're all set. In the meantime, as we continue, what's the deal with Dak and Dallas? After winning 12 games last year, are things about to get a whole lot worse? One member of our group says the answer might be yes. Plus, is Tom Brady really, truly done with football, or could there be another comeback in his future? You're not going to believe what you're about to hear from someone who would know as we roll on. Get up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, we're back on Get Up. And meanwhile on planet Earth, did you hear what Devin McCourty, who was Tom Brady's longtime teammate, said about the possibility that Brady might unretire again? Listen to this.
Yo, I think he's done until Miami kind of worked itself out. I'm not saying he's going to, but I would not be surprised if he decided, like, yo, I'm living in Miami now. They just got Jalen Ramsey. They got a lot of things that can go right over there. Just knowing him, the thought that he can throw the ball to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, like, yeah. I could see him very excited.
No.
Let the record show. Nope. Devin McCourty is a longtime teammate of Brady's, a very, very respected member of that Patriot team for a really long time, and will be here tomorrow. We have Devin McCourty
He's
in our studio.
Amazing. No
tomorrow.
Chance.
I got to start with you here, Brewski. I mean, no one knows what. I mean, the Miami gives a call. The Tua, there's questions. There's the concussion fears. There's all this kind of stuff. They don't have a long-term deal done. Could you see Tom answering that call?
I do not. I do not. And I think he's done. I don't think he's coming back. I think it is over for Tom Brady. I did think it was after the first time he retired, too. But then he came back. But there are a lot of things going on, a lot of other factors here. I think this is he's closed the door shut, in my opinion. A 46-year-old body, whatever he's going to be, just coming into a team to play. There's a process that this person believes in terms of Tom Brady. A process of off-season, a process of getting with his receivers about going through specific steps to get ready for a season that I just don't think he's willing to do right now anymore. He can't live that way because it was an absolutely insane way to prepare. He did it for 20 plus years, and that he's done with that lifestyle.
Why were you sitting over here yelling, no way?
No way. At some point, this is done, it's over. By the way, Devin McCourty is amazing, and I'm so glad that you're having him here the day after me, because if I showed up the day after him, it would be like you know, whatever, Jordan to whoever the guy who replaced Michael Jordan was. I'm very thankful that you guys scheduled it accordingly. Sorry, here, she got your
So, Pete, tell me what your thoughts
yes,
are.
Yes, no chance, Tom Brady. At some point, we have to just accept that the greatest ever play is retired. At what point does the speculation end? Does a full season have to pass by before we say Tom Brady is actually retired?
Even then,
it's still okay. So until Brady's,
this is a guy who played for, who clearly seemed to want to play forever. He decided to come back last year under really unusual circumstances. It feels likelier to me based upon just where we know him to be in his life, and again, all the personal stuff is none of our business, except to the extent that it matters to him as a football player.
Yeah, not buying it.
It feels like he's in a likelier place to want to come back and play now than he was then, particularly right there in South Florida. It's one thing not to have wanted to move across the country if your kids are going to be in Florida and you're going to move to Las Vegas. But if he could be right there in Miami with that team, I think the things that McCourty is saying make sense to me, can't
they? No, they don't make sense to me. And
thank
I think
you.
What makes more sense is Tom Brady spending more time on that yacht that he bought. What's the name of it? 12 Angels? I think that's the name of it.
Yeah.
What makes more sense is him spending time on that yacht with his kids than being on a football field with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. I'm sorry, guys. He's not coming back to play football. And then the other part of this, too, the Miami Dolphins exercised Tua's fifth-year option.
Like,
they're committed
Tua,
to him. They're all in on him. They're going to see that through no matter how it ends. So I just don't see Tom Brady coming back to play football.
Got your back, Tua.
If Tua gets hurt this year, I'm giving you two options. You've got a Super Bowl caliber roster. They've made every aggressive move you could possibly make.
No.
Mike White, Tom Brady.
Mike White,
tell me which way you're going.
Pretty good football.
Okay, great. I gotcha.
I'm not coming in like that.
Versus Tom Brady. Not so much. All right. You want to see maybe the greatest performance in the history of the NCAA tournament? Let me show that to you after we go through the more or less. How about that smooth work
that
there?
Well done.
Caesars
right
Sportsbook,
there.
NFL team win totals yesterday. The game is called More or Less. Yates, Niners, 11.5 wins, more or less.
I normally do not back teams that I don't know who the week one starting quarterback would be, but the 49ers with quarterbacks that were coming out of the woodwork last year were one of the most dominant teams in the NFL. They got better on defense this offseason with the addition of Javon Hargrave, giving me more than 11.5 wins. By the way, the Cardinals and Rams going the wrong way in that division.
All right, but their number is one win higher than the Eagles. Teddy, Eagles 10.5, more or less?
You got 17 games to get 11. I'm taking that bet right there. I'm going to go with more. And I know they've had some departures in terms of the defensive side of the ball, but younger players are going to step up. You've got draft picks, draft capital. Let's see what they do with that. But then the leadership is still there in terms of Cox and Kelsey and a lot of the guys that have come back to still lead that team. The core is there. They will win 11 football games.
All right, Canty, the Cowboys number is only one fewer, 9.5 wins. You going more or less?
I'm going less.
Less?
I'm going less. I feel like the additions of Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks, but the reality is that the Dallas Cowboys play in the toughest division in their conference, and they've got the NFC West and the AFC East, both divisions with multiple playoff teams from a year ago. AFC East might be the best division in all of football. And then, oh, by the way, you've given more responsibility to Mike McCarthy, somebody that hasn't proven that they can do a good job in terms of game management and player discipline.
All right, we'll talk more about those as we go. But here, as was foreshadowed a moment ago, maybe the greatest performance in the history of the NCAA tournament, Caitlin Clark, superstar from Iowa, taking on Louisville in the Elite Eight, and just feast your eyes. Everything she does, spectacular. Now, that one gave Iowa a 9-point lead. She does it inside. She does it outside. She's knocking down shots from everywhere. When it was all said and done, Caitlin Clark finished with 41 points, 10 rebounds, and 12 assists. It is the only 40-point triple-double ever in an NCAA tournament game, men's or women's side of the field. She's just spectacular, and she leads Iowa to the Final Four, 97-83, your final there. And so the NCAA Women's Championship continues tonight. Two more spots in the Final Four are up for grabs with the Elite Eight matchups. You got Maryland, South Carolina, game one, and then you got Ohio State and Virginia Tech. The Final Four will be decided and complete by the time tonight finishes up. All right, as we continue, LeBron's return. Spoiled by the Bulls, we'll tell you what Anthony Davis didn't do that should have the Lakers really concerned. Plus, did you see what Sir Charles had to say about KD? Let's just say KD's not happy. But is Barkley right? We'll dive into that next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll be right back.
We are back on Get Up, and as we approach the bottom of the hour, we opened this morning with this, the return of the King, LeBron James, coming off the bench in his first game in essentially a month. He scored 19, but the Lakers really struggled, and a bad home loss to a Bulls team that, yes, has a lot to play for, but the Lakers should be on a little bit better off than they seemed yesterday. We bring Vince Carter and Zach Lowe into the conversation here. And Zach, I'll come to you. Anthony Davis takes just 8 shots yesterday. That was a bad loss. It just felt in every single way like a bad loss for the Lakers yesterday. They have 7 games remaining. This thing could go in either direction. They were a bad week away from being out of the playoffs entirely. They were a good week away from getting into that top 6 and feeling a lot better about themselves. How do you see it?
Exactly as you just said, it could go either way, and that's the way it's been for the whole season for the Lakers. But look, big picture, they've been trending steadily up. The trade deadline acquisitions have all helped. The team fits together much better than it did 2 months ago when Russell Westbrook and all that was on the team. I'm chalking up yesterday to LeBron coming back off the bench. That's weird. Throws your whole rotation into chaos. He's a little rusty. AD has some minor foul issues. No D'Angelo Russell. It was a bad game. All of these teams are around 500. The reality is they're going to have bad games all the time. They're all mediocre. Let's see how they play in the next 3-4 games before we start to really panic. But this is what all these teams are. Up and down and up and down and up and down. Just ride the roller coaster.
I feel, VC, like people want to say the Lakers are dangerous because, like could get hot enough to actually do some damage in the playoffs because they have LeBron James and because their jersey says Laker on it. But there hasn't been any real obvious evidence that they're capable of that, regardless of where they slot into this playoff picture. Do you see it? I get that they're trending up, Zach. I see what, you know, I get that they're trending up. But, I mean, you know, they haven't looked anything like what Denver has looked like this year, what even Memphis has looked like this year, what we think Phoenix could be with a healthy KD. Are the Lakers capable, yes or no, Vince Carter, of doing something of consequence in the playoffs?
It's just, I think they can make some noise once they get it all together. It's just my thing, Greeny and Zach, is you say, yeah, we're not going to panic now. Let's just wait and see. But that's the reason you brought Anthony Davis in. So, yes, LeBron is trying to get back into game shape. Yes, he did look rusty, but that's why you have Anthony Davis on your roster to play through him. And he's played well, you know, while LeBron has been out. So now it's just like this is crunch time. This is every game matters for the Lakers. And like we say, I mean, you can't can we imagine LeBron James not in the playoffs? Well, they don't want to be in the playoffs and they feel like they're good enough to make some noise once they get in. Well, every game matters to them. And they just can't drop games just because, like, oh, let's not panic. I don't know. I'm looking at it as a player. And when you have LeBron, yes, we understand he's coming off the bench, which, yes, it 100% is weird. Rhythm, rotation. For him getting his game legs, but you still have Anthony Davis who is playing lights out. So, yes, we're trying to get LeBron acclimated, but you still have that guy, Anthony Davis. He can't have 8 touches. Like, if you're trying to solidify a spot, 8 touches can't happen for that guy.
Yeah, he took 8 shots in the game yesterday, 15 points. He jammed up the finger. We showed you the highlight a little bit earlier here. But both Jay Williams and Vince critical of AD for not being more assertive in what was a really important game yesterday. So, Zach, assess it. I saw you were sort of shaking your head at me. You know, as I have watched, you know, doing the countdown show, I've watched this the Western Conference all year long. I get that they've looked better, but I feel like I could name 5-6 teams in the West that I feel are just definitively better than they are. You disagree with that?
No, I agree with you completely. The Lakers and the Warriors are in the same boat. Big names, big teams, big franchises. We just keep waiting for them to put together a week or 2 weeks of consistent play, and we haven't seen it, and you can explain it away all you want. The reason I was shaking my head, the only reason that I cannot rule out the Lakers making a little noise in the playoffs, like winning a round and being 1-1 or 2-2 in the second round, is that, you know, we're a week removed from the Nuggets being in a crisis. We're a week removed from the Grizzlies being in kind of their own version of a mini crisis with Ja Morant. No one in the West has run away with it or convince you that there's some formidable, gigantic, unbeatable team. Durant hasn't played in a long time. I think they're going to be fine when he gets back. That's the only reason I would pump the brakes on just dismissing the Lakers from potentially being like in a second round series. That's different than winning three in a row. That's really, really hard, and they haven't shown the consistency to make you believe they can do that.
No, that's fair. Go ahead, Vince.
Yeah, no, I just want to say I agree with you, Zach. Once they get in, but that's what I'm saying. The sense of urgency has to happen now. Solidify that spot. Get your wins now. You now have healthy guys on the floor. You know, utilize. Yeah, LeBron, you know, he played well. He played okay. He didn't play great. That's understandable. So Anthony Davis is healthy. So you have to go get these spots now to be that team that we all agree that the Lakers can be, to make some noise in the playoffs. But you got to get there. You can't drop games. You don't want to put yourself in that position is all I'm saying.
All right, so a fun finish to the conversation, Zach Lowe. This would be a good one for the podcast. The Low Post podcast, by the way. If you're a basketball fan, you already know what I'm talking about. All right, you say we're all counting on LeBron and the Lakers. We're all counting on Steph and the Warriors because they are LeBron and Steph. I'm telling you right now, one of those teams, one of those two and only one, is making the Western Conference Final. Which one you got your money on?
If I, first of all, I'd have my money on neither right now, but if I have to put my money on one, I'm going Golden State. Assuming Wiggins gets back, this whole conversation changes. Their whole team locks into place if they get their two-way wing defender, three-point shooter, Andrew Wiggins, back. Absent that, they're not doing much in the playoffs, I don't think. But look, the difference between the Warriors and the Lakers and their respective pedigrees, the Warriors just won the championship last year, and they have basically the same team. So I'm going with them if you're forcing me to pick one of those two.
All right, fair enough. We will see again. They lost a rare home game yesterday to Minnesota, but to the point you make, they're playing without Andrew Wiggins and have been for a while, and he was an integral piece of the team that won the championship last year. Now, another thing that happened yesterday, many may have seen it, after the NCAA tournament action on CBS, 60 Minutes did a profile of Charles Barkley with a long, in-depth conversation, and he was saying, among other things, he was talking about Kevin Durant and the way KD tends to respond to criticism. It's not the first time we've heard it. Here's what Charles said.
He's very sensitive, great player. He's part of that generation who think he can't be criticized. He's never looked in the mirror and says, man, was that a fair criticism?
So that got a lot of attention yesterday, and Durant obviously was watching, or he was aware of it, as I've got Chris Canty in the conversation here. I'm going to bring Vince and Teddy back into it as well so we can get all the players in on this. And I will mention that KD quote tweeted that post, that clip was posted, and Kevin Durant tweeted it by writing, "This ain't getting tiring, Chuck. I'll never respect the words that come out of your mouth, fam. Just deal with it." That's what he tweeted at Barkley. And here's what I'll say. Look, I am on record, and I'm just going to give you guys the floor, because you guys played and you dealt with this stuff, and obviously I did not. But the one thing, and I love Charles, and I generally agree that I think KD pays much too much attention to the things that are said about him. He's an all-time great, and he would be better served, in my opinion, and it's easy for me to say, ignoring all of it. Mm. But the one thing I would say in response to what Charles is saying is, Durant hears more personal criticism than almost any other great player does. It's one thing to criticize a player's game. He's not doing this, doing that. Vince Carter just said Anthony Davis can't just take 8 shots. That's one kind of criticism. Yep. It's another entirely to question almost everything about KD, which he hears a lot from Charles and from many others. So I want to hear from all the players on this. Chris, I'll start with you.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think Chuck has to take a step back and look at it on the whole. We live in a time and space where the interest in the game is greater than it's ever been, and thereby the coverage of the game is greater than it's ever been. Greeny, everybody is a reporter because we all walk around with these camera phones. So to your point, it's not just about KD being criticized in his professional life, but it's also criticizing him in his personal life.
Yeah.
And you're talking about Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, all of the social media platforms, he's getting it from every single direction. So to expect that the human side of him is not going to come out and that he's not going to be defensive because of the frustration with the criticism that piles on, I think that's just unrealistic. Now, to Charles Barkley's greater point about this being a generational thing, correct me if I'm wrong, but he had a criticism about Michael Jordan and the two had a falling out. And to my understanding, they're still not on the same right on good terms.
Right.
And he talked about it last night in that interview. So I don't think this is you know, unique to this generation. I just think it's because of the time and space that we're in right now where players, you know, are responding because they have the ability to in a way that they didn't see 20, 30 years ago.
I think every word you just said is a point extremely well made. Let me get Teddy in. Teddy, you know, you played a generation ago in a sort of a different sport. Football commentary is different than basketball commentary. What do you think of the whole thing?
Yeah, I did play a while ago, and I was in a locker room, and I had a lot of teammates that were sensitive. So I don't think the times have changed that much. We had guys that couldn't take any type of criticism, and they would get in a tither. And we would have locker room just joke fests on how sensitive guys were. So I don't think anything's changed like that. I agree with Canty about, you know, it's about how they – I have the ability to respond immediately to what you say. So you want to criticize me, you want to talk about me in a personal way or even a playing way, I have that medium now to respond. That's the difference now. The sensitivity of players, I think it's still the same because I just go back to when I was playing, like I said, it's there and it's always going to be there and players take things personal. But now I can really tell you that nothing matters to me that comes out of your mouth right now, and I can say that however I want to say that.
What do you think of the whole thing, VC?
To wrap a bow around it, I agree with what all of them have said, because I once had an issue with Chuck with some things that he said, and I took it personal. It was motivation, but, you know, I had the opportunity of being in a locker room, you know, as an older player that came in with no social media and now seeing younger players with social media and seeing the effect that what is said on social media just by picking up your phone and scrolling through at halftime. Guys will walk in and start scrolling their phone, Twitter, more so Twitter, and reading what people had to say and watching them be affected by what was said and carry that onto the court as opposed to what was happening in the game and being affected by the outcome, what is going on in the game in the first half. And that was kind of the frustrating thing to me. And that made us more sensitive, which has given, you know, like Teddy said, now if you say something, I have time to clap back and say what I have to say. And if you know what I'm saying, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, oh, shoot, they said what? Like right now, if I go on somebody has something to say, I can say something real back, put it down, and continue what I'm doing because I have that time. Back in the day when it was like that, you hear it. Most of the time, you just got, it was like, it was already old news. I move on. And by the time you said something, they heard about it. It was an instant. So it's just one of those things now. I think it is a generational thing because of the access of social media and how quickly you can respond.
To me, it is an endlessly interesting conversation. I'm glad we were able to have it here. Teddy, I'm up against the clock. I'll jump back to some of this a little bit later. I will come back to you, Teddy, I promise. I got to move to some other stuff here. First, a reminder, we got big games Wednesday. We're in the final 2 weeks of the season. We got Luka and Kyrie. They're desperate. They're taking on Embiid and the Sixers. Then we go to the desert. We got D-Book and the Suns. We got Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves. Coverage tips, NBA countdown, 7 Eastern here Wednesday on ESPN. Coming up, March Madness in the NFL. Which teams have won the offseason? Chris Canty has a list. He's checking it twice, and he will reveal his top 5 coming up in just a moment. And then let's see how Field does with Sneaky Hembo.
Extremely nervous is how I would describe
myself
right now.
Which Jets quarterback won the most games in his first season with the team? Find out next. Get up on ESPN.
I'm going to get the...
Let the record show Yates is nervous.
Very.
Here we go.
A little sweat.
So the Jets are, hopefully, getting Aaron Rodgers soon. We're hoping he wins a lot of games in his first year as a Jet. Which Jets quarterback won the most games in his first season with the team? So there's a note. Rookies do count. That would be their first year with the team.
Okay. You're not trying to suggest Zach Wilson.
I'm suggesting nothing. People are wondering, does it have to be someone they acquired? Okay. It could be anyone in their first year with the team.
I am not feeling confident at all, but I will offer up a name that I think was in some ways underappreciated during his long NFL career. Vinny Testaverde.
That's correct.
Yes!
Oh, that is correct.
I'm done.
Boy.
Because they traded for him, and didn't they immediately make the AFC Championship
Yes.
game?
Okay. In 98.
Yes.
Vinny came. That. They made the AFC Championship
Nine-year-old
game. They had the lead
that.
At Denver at halftime
yes.
in the AFC Championship game. We were the best team in the NFL coming back in 99. And Vinny, untouched, blew out his Achilles in the first
remember
half
well. Yeah.
of the first week of the next season. And that was it.
Yeah.
And so.
All I remember, my father is from Hawaii. We were visiting. We were unfortunately back for a funeral back in Hawaii. But I remember watching the game from my aunt's house and being like, that is such an unfair
way. Why would you
way.
Share the, I mean, I'm sorry about your loss.
I'm just saying, that's why I recall something that took place, whatever, 29 years ago, whatever the math is on that.
It strikes me as a very odd place to take the conversation is all I'm saying. But
okay, all right, remember you said about I can come back to the show?
Yes, no,
dates?
That was that, delightfully
been,
well.
Okay, okay.
No, we're working on Aaron Rodgers. That's the most important piece of this. Okay, next. The game is called Fact or Fiction. Here we go. I got a bunch of questions. Can't he get in here? Fact or Fiction, the Jets are going to win more than 10 games with Rodgers. Fact or Fiction?
That is a fact, Greeny, and I know that's music to their ears. With Aaron Rodgers, they are the favorite to win the AFC East. Last season, the New York Jets were 7-10. If they had scored 21 points, which was league average, the New York Jets would have been 11-6 and in the postseason. So they absolutely will win more games.
All right, I love that. Teddy, if people were to say that Bill Belichick is on the hot seat in New England, would that be fact or fiction?
Okay, I'm not going to bring up some funeral story or anything like that about this, like field, but no. Bill Belichick, this is fiction. He's not on the hot seat. I think about hot seats and I think about people getting fired. He fixed a little bit of the structure for the coaching staff. The players will be more receptive to it. This is fiction. Bill's not on the hot seat.
I completely agree. Hey, Field Yates, one more for you. Does Lamar lose leverage every day that goes by? People are saying that. Is that fact or fiction?
That is fact, Greeny, because you look at the cap space around the NFL, it is dwindling. Basically, every team has its plan at quarterback. The Texans and the Panthers will take one in the draft. Find me a suitor for Lamar Jackson. You could argue Indianapolis. They own the fourth pick in the draft and could be easily motivated to either move up to pick three or just take whichever quarterback is sitting there at pick four.
All right, so let's see what winds up happening with him. And that brings
us to. Is there a ladder somewhere?
Just get used to it. We stand next to
right, right.
here all the time. In the meantime, so the offseason is by no means over. We still have the draft and everything else to come in particular, but we already can definitely start identifying some winners and losers. So Canty is going to give us the top five offseason winners. Chris, take it away.
Let's get this kicked off in Carolina, Greeny. We're going to go with Frank Reich, offseason winner. He now goes to a division which he is clearly the best coach, in my opinion. He's got a cash-rich owner, and he's got the number one overall pick in a quarterback-rich draft. So it makes sense, Frank Reich going from Indianapolis, being on the quarterback carousel every single year since he's been the head coach. He'll now presumably have the same starting quarterback for his entire tenure down there with the Panthers.
All right, so what you're seeing are all these quarterbacks that he will ultimately choose from. How about number four?
We're going to go with Derek Carr. Same division. Derek Carr goes from being the worst quarterback in the AFC West to being the best quarterback in the NFC South. He's going to inherit a top five defense in terms of yards. He's going to get a 1,000-yard receiver in Chris Olave, and he's going to get a running back in Alvin Kamara that's gone over 1,300 yards from scrimmage every single year he's been in the National Football League. Derek Carr is taking advantage of a really good situation down there in New Orleans, giving him competent quarterback play.
I like that. All right, what's three?
Russell Wilson's got three, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to buy the house, you got to get the homeowner's insurance, and that's exactly what the Denver Broncos did. They went out and got Sean Payton, gave up a lot of cash and a lot of picks in order to make that happen with the Saints. They also went out and bought Mike McGlinchey in free agency, a $90 million tackle to help keep Russ upright. 55 sacks last year Russell Wilson took. Now, for Drew Brees, when he was with Sean Payton, they only gave up 21 sacks a season while Drew was down there. So hopefully, Sean Payton at offense with Mike McGlinchey protects Russell Wilson there third.
All right, who's two?
Number two, got to go with the Chicago Bears. I love what Ryan Poles did, having the number one overall pick. Shout out to Lovie Smith for being able to get that done for him. But being able to have the number one pick and then flipping that and getting DJ Moore for your young quarterback, a number one wide receiver, to go along with Chase Claypool and Darnell Mooney, Cole Kmet, and Khalil Herbert. I think they're putting the right skill position core around Justin Fields, who's an ascending player, and the most talented quarterback in the NFC North now that Aaron Rodgers is gone. I like that move, not to mention all of the draft capital that they've got for this year and future years.
All right, like that a lot. And
If you like that, you're going to like number one.
I'm waiting.
It's your New York Jets.
Yeah.
You know it.
Yes,
the New York Jets.
I know it.
That was a 7-win team from a year ago.
Yeah.
And they're now tied with the Philadelphia Eagles for the fourth shortest odds to win the Super Bowl. Why? Because you're going to get Aaron Rodgers. And I love the move that they made last week, trading Elijah Moore, getting a second-round pick. That tells me that the Jets are moving closer to what the Packers want in terms of overall compensation. This deal is going to get done before the NFL draft. You can book it, Greeny, and you can finally be at ease because you will have your quarterback officially on the roster.
One more comment. You got me so excited.
There you go. There you go.
It says an Apple box.
Good to see you back.
Are the Jets the biggest winners of the NFL offseason?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, if they're able to finish this thing with Aaron Rodgers, you know, I love the Frank Reich call too, Canty, about the coach being the winner, because one of my favorite coaching moves in the offseason was Fangio to Miami and then adding Jalen Ramsey. So I like the Miami Dolphins also because the addition of a coach and Fangio.
If I'm not mistaken, Canty is still taller than Field is.
How big is this human? Kevin, you are like
remarkable. Can we get you to the first?
Can LeBron recruit Canty?
We gotta get you some lift for you.
Apparently,
all right. First take is on the way. Was the foul call the right call at the end of the game in the tournament yesterday? Plus, is there more pressure on LeBron or AD in Los Angeles? They get to all that and more. First take, top of the hour here on ESPN. All right, tonight on ESPN2, Roughnecks and Defenders round out the XFL Week 6 schedule, 7 Eastern, also available on ESPN+. Maybe we'll see some plays like this. Hey, Canty, how about this touchdown from Lawan Winningham of the Arlington Renegades? How about that catch?
Ooh, that is an absolute dime from the quarterback, but it's even better catch. Outstanding right here. Look at that full extension, being able to bring it back in, not let the ball wobble any. Outstanding catch, G.
Yeah, it's a great catch. It's a great throw. That really is a spectacular play. All right. Fun day, fun morning, Yates. It was very nice to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
It is very nice to have a job that I'm excited to come back to. Thank you very much for watching. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.